We head to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Buddy of mine, Chris Manning from Fear the Sword, host of the Locked On Cavs podcast, and I will be his next guest on that podcast that is dropping tomorrow. So a little quid pro quo here with Chris Manning. He joins me now. Chris, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. Glad to be on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining me, and thanks for having me on the Locked On Cavs podcast. I don't want to just do the same conversation that we had, Chris, on the pod, but I'll sort of steer it towards what I was talking about for the last about 40 minutes. What, if anything, did you learn about Kobe Altman specifically this year? What kind of a year was it for Kobe, Chris?
Yeah, I think it's a year where we saw, I think, that Kobe took the really pragmatic path, right? Like, I think, you know, he could have held firm with the vets. He could have hoped, you know, Love comes back. He could have, you know, there could have been an organizational mandate to, like, have Kevin Love play as soon as he was ready, to have Tristan play through some injuries and stuff. But they didn't do that. They acquired assets. They restocked some of the things. They took the path that is actually going to help them build. And, you know, I think we saw Kobe has a vision that's going to set him up for at least have a better chance of success than he might have if he would have just tried to, like, gun it for the 18 no matter what this year, or just, like, not make any moves that he could have. I think he set himself up in a way that was the right decision, and it's the kind of decision you see a guy that does have the long view more so than the short view, and it seems like that might be an organizational thing, which is a good thing.
Yeah, did that surprise you? I mean, go back to the beginning of the year, and it felt like you were getting one set of messaging from the organization, and again, nobody's going to come out and say, yeah, we're going to win 19 games this year, strap in, we're tanking. Like, I understand that you have to put on the facade that we're going to compete and we're going to try for the 8th seed, but did it surprise you that it seemed like pretty quickly they realized that, you know, and I realize Kevin Love gets injured and it changes things, but it felt like pretty quickly they realized, you know what, let's change course here and let's tear the thing all the way down.
You know, I think the thing is, once Love got hurt and it became very clear that it was sort of vague on when he was going to be back and how soon he could be healthy, I think you just saw a team that this was the only option. So it wasn't, like, too surprising to me. I think for me, once Love got hurt and once they said, you know, he's going to be out a long time, we're not exactly sure when he's going to be back, to me, it just seemed like that was the only path. And to me, it seemed like that was Altman's one real choice to do something that was, I mean, that was the only smart move to really make, is to kind of pivot the way he did. So I think, if anything, he deserves credit for just recognizing that and being able to do it.
Chris Manning with me from Fear the Sword and the Locked On Cavs podcast. Obviously, we've seen Colin Sexton alter his game as the season has gone on. How do you, as somebody who's been in the locker room and dealt with Colin, have you seen him change just as far as his demeanor goes? There was so much talk early in the year that he wasn't getting along with the veterans, and it's probably a weird spot for him to have been put in. Does it feel like he's, you know, as we see his game improve, does it feel like his mood is improving?
I think he's a little more at peace. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that's going to be super verbose or super, like, candid with us. I think that's not really his personality. You know, I talked to him, like, when he, like, after he got drafted, when he was, like, at camp, and he was very reserved. He was very, like, quiet, and he's still kind of that. But, like, a week ago or 2 weeks ago now, he made a joke about, like, dunkers. Like, I'm a dunker, and was, like, sort of just, like, having fun with it in a way he wasn't before. So I think he's more relaxed. I think he's kind of grown into himself a little bit. But I think he's always kind of been a confident guy in a way that just comes across how he plays and his belief in himself and how much he works. So I think he's just a guy that he's just gone through the rookie gauntlet, and he's, you know, improved and kind of matured. But he definitely seems more comfortable, and he seems like he is, you know, more on page with everyone else. He's usually can spot him in a game, like, taking advice and kind of being receptive to things that people are kind of telling him.
One of the things that we've talked about, and one of the things that you have to love about Colin Sexton, is he's improved throughout the course of the season. It's hard to spend a whole lot of time in the gym as a rookie playing an 82-game NBA schedule. I mean, usually you make those leaps and bounds during the offseason. What do you expect, Chris, to see from him as he comes back next year? What do you think he's going to be working on primarily this summer, and how much better do you think he can get with a full offseason under his belt?
I think the big thing for me will be to see what he looks like as an offensive initiator in terms of leading an offense. It's something that I think will largely determine what kind of pieces will fit with him and what kind of role he's going to be best suited for. If he can start passing open guys better, more functional leading an offense, it's going to allow the Cavs to do more stuff. It'll allow him to kind of have a higher ceiling as a player. So I want to see that more than anything. When we get the summer league, you know, if he can go in there and score the way he's doing now at a higher rate, assuming he plays summer league, of course, and also, like, is passing guys open at that lower level of play, that's going to be a really good sign. Defensively, we need to see him, I think, take steps where he's, you know, still kind of gambling, doing some of the stuff he normally does, but also just playing a little more sound and kind of recognizing stuff more, just reading things more. I think at both ends of the floor, it's just having the game slow down where he can read it. And if he can make that leap and be, you know, not like the worst, one of the worst three defensive players in the league at point guard, and you know, have an assist percentage that is indicative of a guy who's actually like leading an offense, that will tell us that he's, you know, making that leap. And those are, to me, the two big broad areas where he's really going to have to take that leap if he's going to, you know, become an all-star like I think some people in the Cavs think he can be.
Chris Manning with me from Fear the Sword and the Locked On Cavs podcast. You can read him sometimes in Cleveland Scene as well. Let me ask you this: as you look for the look forward towards the offseason, and you go through kind of the the outer reaches of the roster, some of these guys who potentially could be back. I love David Nwaba. I'd love to see him back. I'm talking to the Nwabas, the Stauskases, Marquise Chris. Who do you think will be back, and who are you interested in bringing back from some of the guys who were sort of on the periphery this year?
I think Nwaba's a must. I think he's, you know, by far the best defensive player on the team. If they tender him, they can, you know, match into contract to get to as a restricted free agent. I think there's no reason not to bring him back. Like, it would be very weird to me if he's not on the team, frankly.
Chris, real fast, what do you think he gets?
You know, I think like he could get, like, it depends on his market, but like, I don't know how much teams are going to go out of their way to like pay him. And I think last summer saw like restricted free agency is not going to be kind to him. So like, if you could get him at like six per, that seems to me like, not like 6 years, three per, maybe like a team or a player option at the end of it. Like, that seems kind of reasonable.
I love it.
I think that gets him a pay bump that he deserves, and also like gives him a chance to hit free agency again before he's, you know, 30 years old. Stauskas and Chris are interesting because, like, I think Stauskas can, like, whether he was a rotation player at the Blazers for a bit, then fell off. There's, I think, a ceiling on clearly on what he is, but I think he could be at least good wing depth. Chris is just like a wild card because it's harder to bring him back if they have those five bigs, Thompson, Zizic, Love, Nance, Thompson, all under contract. Like, there's not really minutes for him, and he's not ever going to play the three. I wonder if he's a two-way contract guy. Like, bring him in, have him a year where he can play in the G League, kind of learn some of the basics in his game that he clearly doesn't have, and then play him in the NBA when you need to fill minutes, and then see where that gets. And that, to me, would be a kind of a unique way to keep Chris around and maybe develop him, but not like commit like a full-on roster spot to him.
Does he drive you as nuts as he drives me?
He can't set screens, and I just like can't believe that. Like, I just feel like if you're gonna have him and Tristan on the team next year, Tristan should just spend like all summer or like all of training camp like teaching Marquise Chris how to set screens.
Screen camp. It's Chris. It's standing still.
And like putting your body, he just if you watch him, like people when you watch him play, just watch him. He just never puts his body on dudes. Just something he just doesn't do. He just kind of gets to the right spot and like doesn't actually make the impact. It's something that if you watch Larry Nance, he got much better at it from working with Tristan when he got to the Cavs last year. It's like a real skill, and it's like not a fun skill, but it's really useful when you're a guy whose best skill might be rolling to the rim and dunking on fools like Marquise Chris can.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is his way to secure a long-term contract and to secure a long-term career in the NBA is to be that guy. He drives me nuts. 1 year from today, Chris, we're talking to Chris Manning from Fear the Sword. 1 year from today, Kevin Love, Cavalier or no?
I think yes. I would have said no a couple months ago, but I think I just think it's. I don't know what the market's going to be like for him exactly. It could be more robust than I'm thinking. I would be, if I was the Cavs, very picky about what I would take back from him. Like, if you're not getting good first-round picks or good young players, like, there's no reason to deal him. He's got the de-escalating contract. You could trade him later, theoretically. He makes Colin better. He makes Jetty better. He's going to, you know, lessen the pressure on, like, Culver or Barrett, whomever they get, to really, like, be good from day one. So I'm going to say yes.
All right, same question. Well, not same question. Larry Drew, is there no chance he's coming back? And then part B is, who's going to be the next head coach of the Cavs?
I think it'd be surprising if he came back. It seems like there's been no discussion on from either side about a new deal. It seems like he got his guarantee. He did what they asked him to do, and he's going to, you know, be shaking his hand on the way out. And the last time we'll hear from him is when they do exit interviews. I don't know who's going to be the head coach, but the name that I just keep thinking is interesting is Jordy Fernandez. He was the coach that Canton charge. You can find a number of Mike Gainsey quotes, who was the GM of the Canton Charge and now is Kobe Altman's right-hand man, about like how much he loves Fernandez. He's younger, got that player development background. He's on the Denver Nuggets staff this year, so he's coming from a kind of an in-vogue team. He kind of would check all the boxes. Him or like Chris Jentz seem to me like two guys that will likely at least get interviews.
What is the type? Is that the type you're seeing, the development? You said he checked all the boxes. You want a guy who's familiar with development, preferably young, I guess probably a first-timer?
Yeah, and I think a guy or, you know, the type of guy who can, like, install a modern offense with ball movement, with spacing, with, you know, kind of understanding how to play, like, and run an offense and design an offense in this type of NBA and not an NBA that Larry Drew, for all of his, I think for the good stuff he's done, he does sort of run older, less modern. So if you want a guy who's going to put in more modern systems for this roster.
I swear, Freddie Kitchens. I think you just described Freddie Kitchens.
let's have Freddie Kitchens coach both teams and see what happens.
Chris Manning, before I get you out of here, I did want to ask you this. Just when you go back and think about this season, it was crazy, obviously. Was there a player who you had lower expectations for who sort of, you know, maybe leapt out at you, or a guy who you were really impressed with over the course of the season, what was a very, very long season? I'm thinking of Jordan Clarkson. I don't know if I just set you up for that question, if that was going to be your answer. But was there anybody who you're like, you know what, you know, props to that guy for sticking with it all year?
I'll say Clarkson really did grow on me, like, especially when they've had him cutting more and not just attacking in a spread pick and roll or isolation where, like, his bad tendencies come out. But I think my co-answer is Nwaba and Nance. I think Nance is a passer. And as a shooter, has really become interesting. You know, the three-point shooting is not all the way there yet, but he takes them. He's comfortable taking them. And the next step is, can he do it over the course of a full year? And you look at Nwaba, the first time he made the correct defensive rotation, I was just, like, in love with how that guy plays basketball. So I think for me it's those two guys and Clarkson for sure, because I do think he did some stuff and improved in a way that I didn't necessarily see. And I think he can be a useful piece on a good team.
All right, as we get ready for the playoffs, Chris, and I'll get you out of here on this, who do you like in the finals?
Warriors Bucks, I think the Warriors probably win it, but I'm thinking Warriors and Bucks in like a 6-game series where Giannis like is insane, but it's not quite enough.
All right, good stuff. He is Chris Manning. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. It's at CWM Writes, and follow all of his stuff for Fear the Sword, Lockdown Cavs, and Cleveland Magazine as well. Chris, thanks so much, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jake.
All right, there he is, Chris Manning. And, of course, all of our guests join us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And make sure you keep an eye out for the next Lockdown Cavaliers podcast with Chris Manning and yours truly. I will be the guest on that podcast.